Welcome to the drunken commentary track for The Prestige. On the count of three, one should push play from the DVD menu. One, two, three.
Hopefully not too drunken.
Here are the requisite warnings. It's a large fine.
$250,000.
We saw this movie in the theater and
argued bitterly about its ending. Okay, that was later.
I think we were both disappointed with the ending originally, and I think I've come to terms with the ending and Pamela has not yet. I think there's also still a great deal of confusion about this movie, about what actually happens, particularly relating to the degree of science fiction or supernatural.
And I'm just puzzled by that, because I think it's all very straightforward. It seems to me it's laid out beautifully, and that's why I'm so aggravated by the end. I think you're probably right, and we'll get to that, I'm sure, but it strikes me that there's enough there to feed you every piece of it. And you've read the book, I haven't, so I can't tell if it's reasonable, but you're right there. Right there in the title. With all the hats. How can that not give you... Do we need to start over?
No.
Okay.
We're dealing with subtitle issues. The first thing you heard was the question, are you watching closely? Which comes from a character played by Christian Bale. Followed by Michael Caine's little exposition about what makes magic trick. Our argument about this movie is whether the ending is too blunt or what the purpose is, because it seems that the primary MO of the movie is that it plays. Almost far too generously and far too fair, that there's no reason you shouldn't be able to figure out everything that's going on long before the reveal, and yet the end seems to be pretend that it's some sort of big shock, when the reality is that opening shot and what happens throughout it makes it fairly clear what's happening. Yet there are people who wonder whether Hugh Jackman's character is, whether there's a twin or whether he's cloned or things of that nature. And I think there are some confusion still about plot points, which is bizarre because Christopher Nolan and his brother, who created Memento together, here are making sure that you can never say that you shouldn't have seen it coming. Here's where the movie really eclipses the book. In the sense that you get a sense of suffering in this opening that the book doesn't really touch on.
Does it just gloss over it?
It doesn't really deal with the issue of... It's sort of mentions in an offhand way the prestige, which is the dead body that gets created every time the Hugh Jackman's transported man trick done. But it doesn't really deal with the issue of sacrifice, the idea that Hugh Jackman is essentially killing himself every time he performs that trick.
Which I think is the crux of the movie.
The sacrifice, you mean?
Right, because the whole thing they keep talking about, you have to get your hands dirty, there has to be sacrifice, there has to be some challenge to it.
Yeah, sacrifice is the theme of the movie. In the book, it's more about the division of self, and there are some major ways that the book and movie diverge. But it's very clear. They're very different works. I think that the issue of sacrifice is abundantly clear here, and of the cost of doing magic, essentially. Whether it's what Borden does to himself and to his brother, we're assuming you've seen the movie, or what Hugh Jackman's character does to himself every night. The book is a very different animal. It's sort of written in diary form, and it has a contemporary element, and it doesn't have the whole criminal trial element. Reading the book, it was a bit like I was kind of mad at the book and mad at the movie. I wanted them to essentially fuse and become take the best parts of each and become something more. Seeing it, what was even evident for the first time when you see it, things become much more obvious the second time, the third time you see it. It's clever, but it never tries to disguise things too much.
I agree. It never hides the ball. It's always there to see.
If you want to see it, because one premise of the movie is that we want to be tricked. And the second is that we never pay attention to the right things when we're watching magic. And the metaphor is that cinema is very similar to magic. And that we want to be tricked by it, essentially. What's not really clear here, what's really interesting to me is the idea that even when the stakes have been raised, where Borden is in prison and Angier at this point, as far as we know, is dead, there's still an attempt to figure out their secrets, that their war has essentially escalated to the point that they are, no matter what has happened, they're still going to pursue the other secrets. And the idea, this whole idea of tunnel vision, which I think you see in a lot of Christopher Nolan's movies, whether it's there in Memento, it's there in his remake of Insomnia, it's there in Batman Begins, this complete blindness to what one would rationally or reasonably do. Instead, this irrational pursuit of things seems to be a very consistent theme for him. Do you recall seeing this in the theater and what kind of what you were thinking at this point?
I absolutely recall seeing it. I don't know what I was thinking at this point. Certainly the hats were confusing to me.
Limp is confusing here, obviously. Or the limp here was a good indication of where you are in time when you're looking back on it and trying to place things. Mm-hmm. It's a beautifully photographed movie. This reminds me very much of various Dracula stories, where they're told that you're going to have to walk the rest of the way, whether it's Nosferatu, the Herzog version, or the original Dracula. It seems a fairly consistent theme in Dracula. And
we can only take you so far.
Right.
If you want to go there, you have to do it yourself.
And there's this, and here the rather than being some abomination as a vampire, is there's the what is dangerous and what one we cannot take you to is science, which I think is kind of interesting. That, of course, is Gollum. He sounds like John Spencer. Not of the blues explosion, but of presumed innocent in the West Wing.
You're right. He does. I miss him.
He's dead.
Yes, I know. I'm sad about that.
I think the thing that irritates me about The Prestige was that it was reviewed essentially as a trifle, and that reviewers said it's a wildly entertaining movie. But there was not a consideration of its depth, and I think it's a very rich movie, as in the way that the book is also rich, but it's really dealing with issues of identity and duality and sacrifice, and I think it's dealing with them in sophisticated ways, and I think the problem with Christopher Nolan's movies is that they are they don't beat you over the head with how important or dense or intellectual they are, that they have a surface that is entertaining, and that it's difficult for people to look past that a lot of times, I think Batman Begins was grossly underrated. It was well reviewed, but I don't think it was really considered in thematic ways. And I think this is very similar. You're giving me the look of that I'm crazy.
No, I was actually trying to figure out who the magician is in this case, because that's Ricky Jay.
Yes, of course it's Ricky
Jay. I know, I'd forgotten. I was thinking. Hugh Jackman just kissed her thigh, and
it's a great joke.
And I was focusing on who it is who's tying the knot, because it's important.
The issue of duality is, I think, well, to step back a little, I think one of the joys of Christopher Nolan is that he has a sense of humor. Using Ricky Jay as a hack magician is a lot of fun, but in terms of the theme of duality, you have Christian Bale and Michael Caine playing roles that are not dissimilar.
I understand you can give him that credit for that, but I don't think you can give the movie credit, I guess.
No, but it's sort of, there's this like extra textual element of duality. You bring the
Michael Caine's really playing that role more for Hugh Jackman's character than he is for Christian Bale's.
Not in the end, he isn't.
Yeah.
I mean, in the end, he ends up, and you see who he's working for, really. I think everybody brings a certain amount of baggage to a movie. I mean, the stars do. And Hugh Jackman is kind of the polished showman, which is his persona, whereas Christian Bale has sort of this brooding element to him, whether it was as Patrick Bateman in American Psycho, Mm-hmm. Just pulling that out of my ass.
I think that's right, actually.
Or as Batman, there's this, or as the role in The Machinist. I think Christopher Nolan's casting is very smart, in that he's playing off these people and what we know of them and how we feel about them. And I think especially in this case with Christian Bale and Michael Caine, I think when it turns out that Michael Caine is working for Christian Bale's character at the end, you of course kind of beat your head and say, well, of course, who else would he work for? Batman. Cutter is mentioned in the book, but he's not a character. There's just a mention, I believe. The book is very much in the style of a late 19th century novel. It's not exactly an epistolary, but it's not very far from it. It's diaries, letters, etc. Very little third-person narration. Was that a single shot?
Looks like it.
It's one of the joys of this movie is that there are things that are obviously special effects, and there are things that are obviously done. There are things that are done in post production, and there are clearly things that are done live in terms of the magic. And it never draws attention to itself one way or the other, so it's pretty seamless. I think of the shot when Hugh Jackman has his double, and the camera is circling, and it's very, very much in the. It's a very showy shot, and yet it doesn't draw attention to itself too much. Hugh Jackman has a very nice body.
Yeah. Not for any good reason, though.
They're the French. There are layers of storytelling here. I don't know that there's a whole lot we're actually shown as objective truth. It's all coming from diaries that are handed back and forth and that are of questionable veracity. Certainly they are motivated by things. They are not diaries in a conventional sense. They are essentially props meant to get a reaction from somebody. So there's a lot of I think there's a lot of information that we might. I think here is the first here comes the first, well, how stupid I was if you didn't see it before, when the child is talking to Borden.
See? He's alive. He's fine. Get it.
But where's his brother? Borden knows a little something about brothers, eh? And of course, the bird trick has its echo in the trick that Angier does.
Right. That's been something that's become more apparent to me. Is
but it's not.
I've seen it.
It's not. But it doesn't beat you over the head with it.
Mm-mm.
It's there for you to see.
Or not.
I think here's where this movie distinguishes itself from The Illusionist, where there are clearly a lot of digital effects, and they are bluntly digital effects. There's a real sense
here. The secret
here.
Impresses no one.
Yes, the secret impresses no one. The Illusionist never convinced
and of course,
me.
It's Alfred, which is hilarious, also. Sorry.
Alfred because of Batman.
Yes. I'm sorry, go ahead with The Illusionist and its digital effects.
I'm thinking of the tree, especially, the tree trick and the spirit trick. There's no way those things could be accomplished. Which makes you think that there's, of course, that one's a little puzzling, unless you know. I mean, right there, there's no way that could be done, except I think there's something with The Illusionist where it doesn't really play fair because things that are supposedly can be explained completely rationally are done with digital effects in the movie. Whereas in the end, you're supposed to sort of believe that the killing of the woman was essentially a trick. But there's no real... It's not consistent. There are no rules that are set forth. What happens when you take us off to the trial? We've been sold to Lord Caldwell, an avid collector of persons. That's the second time we've heard of Lord Caldwell.
Caldlow, yes.
Caldlow.
I'm
sure that he dispels and disappears from simple and disappointed. It's real. Pamela's a little baffled that people don't understand or don't accept the reality of this trick. That there is no trick. But I assert that there are people who see the movie and see immediately that Borden has a twin.
Which is fine.
And those are the people who have difficulty accepting that what happens with Angier is that he essentially replicates himself through some scientific method every night and kills himself every night.
So, in fact, my ability to suspend my disbelief informs my watching of this movie in a way that's greater than folks who don't... who aren't able to
those who
that.
Look for the rational explanation... to finish the thought, and then there are people who get very quickly... who accept the reality of Angier's trick and for whom the pieces click into place once we get with Tesla and where that kind of establishes.
See the cats
that.
And the hats.
Yes, the cats and the hats. And those of us who do that are like, well, a twin? What? We were those people, I think.
Yeah. I did not see for a second that it was a twin.
I think that people are not likely to be fooled by both, that they're going to get one of them and that they're not going to get the other. So to go back to your question, I think you're right. I think if you tend to suspend your disbelief, and I guess I'm one of those suspenders.
Less than I am, for sure.
But in this case, absolutely, the twin was a complete surprise to me.
But generally, in my experience with watching movies with you, that I tend to more readily suspend my disbelief than you.
Yes, but I think we are both open to that. we're open to the possibility of, say, the supernatural. And this isn't supernatural exactly, but it is.
I want to believe.
Yes. But that prevents us from seeing the rational explanations.
Well, what would the rational explanation be if it weren't?
No, we believe. We understand the supernatural element at work with Angier. But because we buy into that, we're not as attuned to the completely mundane and kind of disappointing trick involved with Borden. Does that make sense?
Mm-hmm. I assume CPR is not invented at this point.
He's a magician, not a doctor, damn it. This is my little Star Trek geekiness for the night.
Yeah, well.
Of course, now this is Borden right there.
No, that's Angierus.
I love the script. I love the production design with this. I think there's a great joke here. I'll wait till it comes up before I talk about it. But
he said it was like going home. Who do you want, Paul?
See, they tell you. They give you a reason to question it.
What I love about...
But not so bluntly that you do.
What I love is that you're used to... We're conditioned by those kind of confrontations where the person just can't remember what went wrong.
Mm-hmm.
Whereas in this case, we don't allow for the possibility that, well, he doesn't know because he didn't tie the knot.
He wasn't the guy.
He wasn't the guy who tied the knot. He was the one who wasn't there.
Right.
And of course, right there, that two shot, these two shots with Borden and
Fallon.
We should have told Fallon because
it might
he's
be
the
his.
Most likely it's his. And it's just the most blunt piece of information you give, which is some days I believe you, some days I don't, or some days you mean it, some days you don't.
But I think that's a legitimate feeling. I think when
except
you've been
It's repeated so many times that it's so obvious in
sure.
retrospect.
But
and which is what I love about it because
but going into it, I think you can say to yourself, I've been in a relationship where I think
yes.
On some days you think it's true and on other days you just can't figure it out at all.
And that whole what knot did you tie? I don't know. You rationalize these things. Well
I can't believe you're
so traumatic, but it's
I can't believe your fingers are still infected after all this time.
Yes. This movie is if you want to understand foreshadowing and repeatedly, I think this is almost a a perfect narrative exercise in foreshadowing. Nothing is sprung on the viewer that they shouldn't have seen before.
Once you know, she says, it's actually very obvious.
Comes first. I'm not today, okay? So the one who loves her is the one who was playing Fallon earlier, which is why we should have told Fallon, because
it's really his baby.
Yes. Now I think that they share her.
Do you think sexually. They really share her?
I
don't. I don't for a second. I think you could easily get away with never having the wrong brother.
Of course, right there, there's Angier with a bullet.
Making it disappear.
Mm-hmm.
No, I think you could easily get away with not ever having...
I think there's something, again, the two-shot, Borden and Fallon. There's something here that shows kind of the thanklessness of being a magician.
I think the thanklessness of being any kind of performer in that circumstance.
Probably true. Well, I think any kind of performer, period. Has this element in that there is a need to do something genuinely unique
that stills the crowd,
and there's this desire, there's this need that drives performers, and I think it's why this works beyond being about magic. It's about lots of things, but I think it's about any performing field. Of course, they didn't show the person's face there. They show the wedding ring, though. Wedding ring rule.
Why would he hand it to him?
Because he doesn't know it's him. Because he's not paying close enough attention. Looks like Mel Gibson there. With that craziest beard. He knows now. Chances that he's going to ask the wrong guy twice. And look at the crowd that loves
thinks it's hilarious. Fucked up. One half of me swearing blind, the other half convinced.
I think that I didn't go into the book blind. I think the book, I'm guessing the effect is the same, but the book is a little more, the cinema allows you to do this a little more elegantly than the book could do. And here's the line. It's as bad as the day it happened. I think, like Memento, you can kind of go through and use the evidence that you're given to draw certain relationships and understand the mechanics of the plot in a way that you probably can't if you're just watching it. Like, which Borden is it at any given time? There are enough clues to figure that out at every point. The wedding ring rule, by the way, in case you didn't know, is that any time that you see a wedding ring prominently displayed, as in here, it usually is an indication or usually comes at a point of infidelity or, in this case, of widow, being a widow and loss and the anger and hurt related to that, but his wedding ring is very prominent. It was interesting when we saw this. I think you liked the movie better than I did initially. And after rewatching it, you were still insistent on the problem of the end, and I had come to terms with it. And so we sort of switched places.
I don't know. I still think I like it very much, but I contend that while I see your read of the end, I still don't think it was necessary.
I don't think it was necessary. I agree with that. I don't think it's necessary in terms of the conveyance of information.
So you've changed your mind about divorcing me over it?
Not sure yet. But I think it can be justified, though. I do not think its only purpose is to explain to the audience something which should have been obvious to them. I think there's there's a character, I think related to that tunnel vision, there's an important, there's something important that happens in that last shot that I think justifies its existence. It doesn't mean I like it or I wish it hadn't been a little less blunt, but I understand it and can live with it. And since the ending was the only issue I had with the movie, this becomes something of it's become one of my favorites of recent years. I do believe that Scarlett Johansson has become as Jude Law was 3 or 4 years ago, which is she shows up in everything and it seems a little much.
I don't quite get what goes wrong here. Well, not here, but...
Well, Borden tricks him. Borden thwarts the trick. I don't think we're meant to know exactly what he does, but he's figured out what's going on and he is able to make sure that it goes wrong. I think the bird essentially is sucked out of the cage and up one sleeve, but in this case, he prevents that from happening somehow. I think the editing of this movie is lovely. Much better than Departed. I mean, that intercutting right there of both the rehearsal and the actual, you know, of the testing and then the auditioning essentially
the
theater owner. It conveys information without really conveying it very explicitly.
Forgotten his insistence on the great Danton being a result of
his wife's dying.
Well, that it was her idea. I'd forgotten that.
One thing I love about the characterizations is that the the Broadway performer is the one who has the polish, and the edgier one is the one who doesn't know how to sell a trick.
But has more talent.
Yes. Because I think that's probably... it's playing off their images. I think most people think of Hugh Jackman as very attractive, but in a good actor, but not... That I think that most people think Christian Bale is a better actor.
I don't know. I think it's legitimate that people who know how to sell a performance are generally more successful than those.
Absolutely, I agree.
I mean, we just watched 15 minutes of Grease, You're the One That I Want, and one of those creepy guys did very well because he was smarmy and sold it as opposed to having real talent.
The question is, why did he give him the gun? Same here as
he didn't recognize
it. It's a tunnel vision thing. You don't, until it's too late, you don't realize. I mean,
and part of the beauty of this is they're tricking each other.
Yeah. I think he just crushed the bird in the cage. I think he crushed the cage in his own hands. Bless you.
Thank you. Try not to sneeze too loudly into the recorder.
I don't think I recognized until tonight that you sound like John Spencer, and that's what always threw me about him.
He speaks twice as quickly, though.
Mm-hmm. I think something that throws people about the movie is it's clear that Borden threw Angier down the wrong path and sending him to Tesla. And that Tesla never built anything for Borden. And so I think people have difficulty accepting that, well, it just so happens that Tesla could build something that was useful for Angier.
I don't have trouble with that. I have trouble with... starting back further on the path, why would Borden send him to Tesla in the first place?
We see them both at the exposition in a little bit, where they're both there. And
right.
So he knew that it would capture his imagination. I love the production in this scene. There's the fog and it's very simple. I mean, it's not difficult to achieve this effect, but it's just a gorgeous piece of cinema.
It is beautiful.
Light bulbs coming out of the ground like flowers. Great little bit of dialogue. Doesn't provide him an answer. Where are the wires?
Exactly. You saw it last week. Right?
And of course, the light bulb being a universal symbol of inspiration.
Mm-hmm.
Here's the exposition, which we will see both Angier and Borden. And you have to know what will credibly distract somebody. And in this case, they. He couldn't just send them to some illusionist. He has to promise them essentially real magic, or rather wizardry rather than magic or an illusion. There's an echo here, of course, between of the rivalry, which apparently was real between Edison and Tesla, that I think is really fascinating in the sense that you could look at this rivalry as being very trivial, of not having any merit, and yet there's a ripple effect, and you can see, or rather you see its reflection in a rivalry that possibly does have a real impact on the lives of everyone, which is, you know, how things are invented, or what, you know, whether it's beta or VHS, essentially, which is the difference between AC and DC.
I don't know. We use AC and DC. Batteries.
Ah, no, but the direct current, you know, the alternating current being able to travel much larger distances,
yes,
versus direct current, which essentially degraded over a period of over distance.
Right.
Edison won, and at least I think the implication is that
even though it was inferior,
the inferior thing won
in part because we weren't afraid of it.
Well, that there's that.
I mean, that's what they say.
That which I hadn't thought of it, but also because of a petty rivalry that the world was lost something because of that rivalry.
But also because it wasn't prepared to accept.
His mind Tesla's. Is a divided one. His soul is restless.
Contradictory nature.
Is this close to catching it?
Even then, it's not clear to me.
It seems a little bizarre to me that in an intimate moment, Fallon wouldn't speak still. That seems to be pushing the bounds of...
Hmm. Well, but would you speak in front of the child? I can live with that.
Do you think the child does not know?
You think she doesn't know that Fallon and...
Yes.
Yes, I think she doesn't know. But I'm saying, I think you wouldn't speak about her being removed from his care.
No, what I'm just talking about is why he wouldn't speak. I mean, part of the conceit of Fallon is that he doesn't talk. And the reason is, obviously, because if he talked, he would give it away. So the reason he wouldn't talk in front of the girl... I think there's a little joke here that Fallon is in some ways the clumsier magician, but sometimes the clumsiness or the lack of art...
Borden,
yes. What did I say?
Fallon.
Same.
Yes, but...
Freudian slip. That Borden's lack of art is to some degree an act, like that, like it was there. It's a great introduction.
Have you ever seen the Tesla coil at the St. Louis Science Museum?
So.
Science Center.
I did not recognize David Bowie initially. It's one of those things.
I knew him right away.
Yes, you did.
Despite his Tom Skerritt mustache.
That's probably what it threw. He doesn't look a little like Tom Skerritt. And you just saw a glint of the wedding ring right there. It's just one of those weird things that it's like the twin thing. It's, well, of course that's David Bowie, but I didn't get it. And you, there's even a, that it's very clear that his eyes are two different colors in that shot, and part of that's the shadow, but the, that's the important little thing there. He's capable, he's capable of doing more than he's willing to do. Which, of course, isn't true with Angier in the end. Of course, right there is one of the themes very nicely articulated.
Mm-hmm.
If you consider the cost, price is not an object, but if you consider the cost. Does the movie ever seem too blunt to you? I mean, this is a very...
No, and that's except at the very, very end when I think it...
But I mean,
that's why I was so aggravated.
This little bit of dialogue, I mean, it's a baseball bat with nails in some ways. I mean, here are the themes of the movie.
Mm-hmm.
But it's... How does it achieve its elegance so that it doesn't feel like you're being beaten by a baseball bat with nails in it?
I think just a baseball bat would be plenty, but...
But it has nails in it.
I don't even think it does. I think I'm perfectly happy with it being explained to me in a way that still conceals the truth.
But it doesn't conceal it. I mean, it's...
It doesn't on a second viewing.
My point is that in the case of most art, the articulation of themes is not a good thing. I mean, it's like in The Departed when Jack Nicholson goes around and, you know, sniffing like a rat and going, "I smell a rat!" And then there's the rat at the end in the final shot. That, in some ways, is the same thing. I mean, it's a clear... It is saying, this is the theme of this movie. And yet I think there's a major difference. It's much subtler, and I think that it's true with, I think it's true in most of Nolan's work, that he's able to incorporate.
I think because it's cumulative, because it's not so crappy as the M. Night Shyamalan twist of, oh, at the end it is all revealed. But at the end you realize all the things you've seen. And he's...
That's a good way to put it. I think that's right.
Because M. Night Shyamalan doesn't play fair, in my opinion. Most of the time.
This movie plays exceedingly fair.
Right, but it's not until you get to the end that you realize...
It's exceedingly fair, and yet it can still fool you.
Yes.
In fact, I don't know... I've never heard anybody... I've yet to find somebody who says, I knew it was a twin, and I figured out immediately... You know, I figured out... As soon as I had enough information, I figured out that he was actually duplicating himself.
So it's one or the other that people get, huh?
That's my theory. I'm not sure that that's true, but I think people get one or they get the other. But and I'm sure there are some people who are fooled by both. But
because it was very clear to me he was duplicating himself, and I did not get the twin thing. Despite the fact that when I go back and look at it, I see it everywhere.
I love the little bit in the last scene in that you don't actually see the trick accomplished. That there's a cut to Cutter, and you hear, and you hear the other door opening, and you know what's happened, but you don't get to see it. It's withholding the magic. Right there, obvious as can be.
Mm-hmm. He tells you right up front.
And he knows, actually. I think the at the end you can say with a fair degree of certainty that he's always been working for Borden since the post-Ricky J period.
I don't know that that was clear to me, even now. I'll have to see that play out.
At the very
out.
End, when I think it's pretty clear. Pamela's going to pee.
Thanks a lot. He's trying to be all quiet and shit.
Now I will tell you how wrong she is about everything.
Talk amongst yourselves.
Ginger, what do you think? Ginger has a new toy. There's an orange and blue lizard. And here's where I think there's this really good humor of this movie, where you've got the drunk Angier double, and just the obvious fun that Hugh Jackman is having playing the character. And of course it's done with over-the-shoulder shots here, and... later it will be they will be in the same shot, and I think it's a wonderful little effect in how both blunt it is about it and also how subtle is about it, how it doesn't throw it in your face that they've put the same guy twice in the same shot.
Get it all squared away.
Yes, you were wrong.
Yeah, well.
He has met himself from the bar.
Ready to meet yourself, Mr. Rangier?
Here's the, it's a lovely shot, I think. Coming up.
All I have to do is keep myself stinking drunk and I want to be able to tell the difference. Have a little fight. Now, would you play this with your performance?
Which is why I think you're wrong about Hugh Jackman being not an actor. Or.
Well, I think in the end... The message is that Hugh Jackman can sell a trick, but isn't that Borden is a better magician. But I think this shows that Angier is willing to, and this is the shots and the way that the camera comes around, and it's aggressive, but it's you can. it both throws it in your face and is kind of subtle about the way, you know, it's kind of, how did they accomplish that? I'm not sure I'm being clear on the appeal of that particular series of shots going around.
No, I'm just arguing that I think it's not particularly fair to characterize Christian Bale as the actor in this movie.
Well, he's a... No, I think Hugh Jackman is a flashier actor, and he's more charismatic. He doesn't disappear into his roles the way that Christian Bale does. But that's kind of the point, isn't it?
Mm-hmm.
Flashier does not make one inferior, necessarily. And I think the one message of this movie is that the... the flashier actually has a greater value in this case. Of course, that was done in a single shot, so that it was and probably very easily accomplished with split screen. But it doesn't draw attention to the cinematic sleight of hand. One thing that's interesting to me is the sense that Hugh Jackman essentially engages on his campaign against Borden because of the death of his wife, and at this point has forgotten about her.
Mm-hmm.
He's been replaced by...
the trollop?
The big-breasted Scarlett Johansson. Of course, the one point with the Asian man is that Borden spots the trick and Gier doesn't.
Because Borden's doing the same thing.
Well,
because Borden is living it full time, just like.
But I think my point is more about Angier, that Angier doesn't have the mind. He's not the engineer. He can't get his mind around how things are done, so he doesn't see.
His talent is the showmanship.
He refuses to see the obvious answer that Borden is using a double. He thinks there's something he just can't get. Whereas the reality is that Cutter was right. He's using a double. Or he has to be using a double. That's the only way he knows how to do it. This comes in at almost exactly the halfway point. It is the... and this isn't the revelation. I think that's going to be wrong. I'll say, in its use of... teleportation and twin brothers, it seems to me to be that Christopher Nolan really wanted to make both The Fly and Dead Ringers as the same movie. Lots of the same themes, lots of the same concerns. So this, the implication of this is that Fallon and Borden always remain in costume, even when in their private studio. Do you believe that?
I do, because of the scene just before when Cutter says...
Anyone could come in here?
Anyone could come in here. Get out of that makeup and costume. Mm-hmm. Anyone could come in here. So I do believe
that. Fair enough. Again, another bit of little throwaway detail that's that works.
Mm-hmm.
I think Borden understands in a way that Borden understands Angier's psychology in a way that Angier can't even fathom Borden's.
Yes.
She's really in a thankless role. I mean, there's nothing she can do with it.
We don't do any tricks
we can control. I think that's an important bit.
Right, but if he's working for Borden at this point,
how does this play out? I think Cutter might actually be end up being the most enigmatic character in the piece, and the most mysterious. Just look at the way his lips are in Jeer's double.
Roots.
It looks like it could be a different actor almost. He just looks remarkably different.
Mm-hmm.
But this is a nicely edited sequence here too, because you see the look on Andrew's face that something is wrong,
mm-hmm.
while we're being essentially given the information that something is wrong. There's a wedding ring again, by the way, on Groot. And the wedding ring becomes important visually in a little bit.
Yeah.
I'm not sure that Cutter is working for Borden at this point. But he's kind of the wild card in all this. We're not quite sure what he's up to. Well, I think.
Nope, I'm good, thanks.
Since the crowd has reacted about things it has seen before, one gets the impression that they might actually enjoy this rivalry more than they actually enjoy the magic shows. Joke there, because of course Borden doesn't have to try at all.
Well, and also,
yeah, of course, there's the source of the blimp that you saw an hour ago, or so. Go ahead.
But he's certainly is quite the showman pulling that off.
Yes, which is my point about his clumsiness being something of an act,
mm-hmm.
is in the prison. Obvious.
All the time, he doesn't know when I look him. All the time, Olivia. That's 2 years. That's what it takes.
Of course, the other bit of foreshadowing for that is the Asian man,
mm-hmm.
the Asian magician who acts gimpy, because that's the secret to his trick.
Right. The great Danton is a blind fool. Although that's not been...
The great Danton is a blind fool. Pardon me?
That we don't know that yet. We haven't seen him.
Yes, we have. We saw
him. You're right.
We saw him with a bowl between his legs.
You're right.
In jail. And neither of these people appreciates the kind of the crossing and double crossing that's going on here. They don't question. Obviously, you would be a little skeptical of what's going on here, given the amount of deception that has happened to this point.
I don't care about my wife, and then he's shocked that it actually came out of his mouth. So who built that? It's not Tesla.
I don't know that I don't think Tesla would build him, essentially something that is used as misdirection.
Well, but Tesla has said already, the first time I was hailed as changing the world, or whatever he says. The second time I was asked politely to retire. I think Tesla would be more than happy to spend time and energy to get paid for something that...
just blows sparks?
Yeah. I don't think that's his passion, but I think...
I don't think Tesla built that. I don't know that there's... I don't think we can say definitively, but it seems to me... it seems out of character to me.
I agree with that, but...
because that's a little echo as well.
What do you mean?
He's fallen through the floor and landed on a container, huh? And it has been shoved on him.
So he's working for Borden at that point, do you think?
I'm not certain. At this point, he has already cut off his or his brother's fingers. He's sacrificed. Whereas Angier has not.
Angier lost his wife.
But not for the sake of a trick.
No.
He didn't volunteer his wife.
I don't know. I'd argue that they were all risking. Borden was risking his hands, his fingers, his life. And Sarah was certainly part of the trick. Or Julia. Julia is the wife who died.
She was part of somebody else's trick, though.
Yeah, but so was he.
I think it's important that we understand here that we've talked about how Borden understands Angier's psychology. If he'd written down, "I have a twin brother," he wouldn't have accepted it. If he basically says, "Tesla built me a machine," he's going to buy that. And it's kind of like we're surrogates, because we accept the Tesla machine.
Mm-hmm.
But we don't see the double.
Except that, had it said, "I have a twin brother," I might have bought that.
I think if that note would have said, "I have a twin brother," I think we both would have gone, uh-uh.
Nuh-uh.
It's not that simple.
Maybe.
I mean, this movie is a perfect demonstration of Occam's pendulum. Or his dog. It would be Occam's razor.
You yes. Understand these things, but perhaps his family must have thought we'd both come home. I was thinking, you know, Boris, you know, he's
suffering twice. I don't think his husband, her husband's being a bore, B-O-R-E, as the captioning says. I believe it'd be B-O-O-R.
Yes.
Is clearly the one who loves the assistant rather than the wife. His brother.
Speaking of the wedding ring rule.
This isn't you. Stop performing. Wedding ring rule.
works. They work for Thomas Edison.
It's interesting the way the movie sort of takes this de facto position against Edison, that Edison is, that nobody liked Edison almost. That they immediately knew that if you're associated with Thomas Edison, it was a bad thing. Edison is so lionized at this point in our culture, whereas I think Tesla, if most people, if they know the name of Tesla, they think it's some power ballad band.
Not me. Thank you, St. Louis Science Center.
It's kind of the Victor the Spoils type of thing.
Yeah.
Rather shows that your double has also cut off his pinky and ring finger.
Finger does one wear a wedding ring if one has chopped off?
That's probably his right hand, rather than his left. I think we need to establish that it is his right hand that gets the fingers chopped off.
It isn't.
You think it's the left?
She just held his left hand in hers.
Wasn't that close
enough. Oh, maybe it was the right hand.
That's right hand right there. Okay. The implication here that this is a dead end, that it has been a wild goose chase. Of course, that will be proven wrong right here, just but by dumb luck, essentially. So he hadn't made a machine for boredom.
No.
Explicit there.
Hadn't made one like that. One of my favorite moments. Kitty.
Meow.
And this was the sequence where everything clicked in place. Well,
no,
this is the sequence where everything clicked in place for me, at least related to to Angier.
Really?
Yes.
You got it right then.
No, not here. As soon as the cat leaves, as soon as Angier and the cat, I leaned over to you and said, he kills himself every night.
Did you?
Yes.
Okay.
Because that opening sequence...
I didn't get it until he walks into the field.
No, it was... Not yet. I mean, we haven't come to the moment where I figured it out. It is here.
Yes.
It was shortly after this that I leaned over to you and said that Injir is duplicating himself and killing himself every night.
Yes.
And I don't know how you can... I mean, you kind of come in with different... You come in with a bias, and I don't know why it is that people do not accept the science fiction / supernatural explanation that is here given. Which of these is my hat? They're all your hats. And I guess it's never... I think maybe people are used to... what are you talking about? The machine has duplicated your hat every time we used it. I mean, maybe that level of explicitness is needed for some people.
Hmm.
I don't know, but it seems bizarre to me that that scene doesn't make clear to people at least what the machine does, even if the implications of that aren't clear.
I'm not quite sure how they aren't clear, but...
Well, I don't understand that either, but maybe it's a way we've been conditioned to watch movies, that we need the exposition. And there were people who saw immediately that, or very quickly, that there was a twin brother, and we didn't.
True enough.
Okay, so it is his right hand that is uninjured.
Uninjured, yes.
And he looks to be wearing his wedding ring on his right hand. Which is interesting, he is incapable of being faithful.
I can't believe I didn't get it here. I got that as just this was somebody who was an intimate who was involved in their family life to the degree that he might be able to do that.
Again. He's Alfred or he's Freddy. This is Alfred.
Mm-hmm.
Alfred loves Sarah.
Yes.
Freddy loves...
The trollop?
Yes. Well, it's too bad because right now, he's the one who loves you. You trust me, then trust Fallon.
Mm-hmm. And I just feel stupid now.
I mean, it's not that there's one, two, or three clues.
There are dozens.
Yes, and it's... And I think that the M. Night Shyamalan example is a good one because I think there are... Here there are literally dozens of things that you should latch on to. The structure of this movie is a lot more complicated, and I think it's unnecessarily complicated, but I think it helps, whether this part of the narrative is coming from whose diary and who's reading it when... But I think that's part of the misdirection. I don't think we're actually meant to question the veracity of anything we're seeing, even though the diaries are deceptive. Does that make sense?
Mm-hmm.
This reminds me of The Shining for some reason.
It's just the ballroom.
But I seem to have outstayed my welcome to Colorado. I think David Bowie gave a very nice performance in this movie, and I think it's...
Perhaps your time will lack in your
field. In, like, The Last Temptation of Christ, I think he sort of stands out and is a distraction, and here I think he is perfect for this.
I had only one suggestion on using the machine. Destroy it. Drop it to the bottom of the deepest ocean. Such a thing will bring you only misery.
He's the only one with any wisdom in the movie.
This was going with it. I heeded it in the old
day. But today I tested the machine. Take precautions. Okay, here's where there are people we know who believe that there are lots of Angiers running about, and I think this is a crucial scene to understanding that it is not the case.
How does he control where
the book
he appears?
The book actually deals with this issue. So we actually don't get the... It's, again, one of those big teases, because you go to the cusp of... it's as if the first time you see the transported man, you don't actually see the trick. You don't actually see what happens right there.
Mm-hmm.
The first time he uses the machine, it's a layer. So you're going to talk. I'm going to go to the bathroom now.
Okay.
Or don't talk.
I just can't figure out how it is that I didn't get this. This should have been very, very clear. That these were two different people, and that this was the man with the little girl was somebody who was who loved her and cared for her and wasn't just some intimate within the family, but someone who cared for her as a parent. That seems devastatingly obvious to me now, but I didn't get it before. And I suppose it's reasonable to think that there are people who didn't get that Angier was duplicating himself every night, but that was very clear to me. And it seemed perfectly reasonable for him, in the midst of this fight, to say, no, I don't love you today. Unpleasant and miserable and uncomfortable, but not something that would indicate that he wasn't her husband or her lover.
Did I miss anything?
Yeah, the big fight where she says, do you love me? And he says, not today.
He admits his deception.
I don't think he does. That's what I was just saying, was I think you would get to the point where you're really pissed off.
Her suicide was surprising to me, but wholly
very
appropriate.
Very surprising. But on the heels of, no, I don't love you.
And beautiful, of course, because she hangs herself as a birdcage, as if she were birdcage.
Right.
Among the birdcages. It's lovely.
the instrument of destruction of all of the other things in his life.
True. I think about what the awards that the departed got and how safe and even if you think it is a great gangster slash cop movie, how safe it is. And the depth and sophistication of this movie irritates me to no end that people didn't recognize that this was, even if you think it's a failure in some ways, it's...
Which I never said.
There's so much more going on in this movie than there is going on in something like The Departed.
I think there's a similar theme, though. I'm not going to argue in favor of The Departed by any means, but I think there's enough self-deception and enough deception of other people, and
the
themes are similar.
The themes are similar, but there's a depth and sophistication here and a rigor that's absent from The Departed. This is an insanely thought out movie, and it is as careful as you can. It is, most people do not recognize, will not recognize just how careful it is.
You don't think that's true of The Departed, that all of those pieces didn't fit together in the same way?
No, I don't.
Okay.
I think the movie is... I think... I think, relatively speaking, The Departed is sophomoric compared to this.
Well, hopefully we'll be around to see Christopher Nolan get his Oscar.
Okay, there is the first at the 1 hour 37 minute mark plus is where you get a sense of, I think you get some of the connective tissue between what Tesla's machine did and what we know it did and how it's being used here. Because we never got the full trick at the beginning. So they've both lost a wife at this point.
Both, but not all three.
Sure. The issue of twins are kind of there's a really interesting use of the concept of doppelgangers and doubles and twins here. With Borden, there's the idea that they essentially have to share a life, that they each have half a life.
Part of me did, but the other part didn't, he says.
So this is the this is Freddy, as opposed to Alfred.
Right.
Alfred loves Sarah. Freddy loves, what's her face? Olivia.
Olivia, yes.
The Borden twins essentially split one life, whereas what Angier does is different. He, he kills himself nightly for the trick. It's not as if there's half of him. There's no sharing. Their existence in the world is momentary. Their combined existence in the world is momentary. Whatever it takes, the time it takes for Angier to drown is the only shared experience they have when he duplicates himself. So if the twin were to die, you lose part of yourself, but Angier is essentially losing his entire self every time he performs the trick.
But recreating it.
And I think the unspoken issue is what happens when you photocopy of a photocopy of a photocopy of a photocopy of an original. I mean, there's this...
Well, but is that what we're dealing with, or are we dealing with a digital reproduction in which there's no degradation?
Well, this goes back to the issue of the questions of the fly. I think the degradation is not... The degradation does not have to be real. There only has to be a concern about a degradation. If what comes out is exactly the same as what went in, it's one thing, but I think there's the fear that when you kill what went in, even if what comes out is exactly the same...
Isn't there something you've lost?
We have committed a sin, yes. And I think that's why that scene of where Angier is drowning at the beginning, and the suffering that you see, and the panic, I think that's where a lot of the value of, or a lot of the emotional content of the emotional understanding of his situation comes from. Because, unlike, as Cutter explains later, it's not painless.
Right.
Takes off his wedding ring. Because why? It's not that there's a brother. There's only one reason for that. It's because there is only one wedding ring.
Right. But if his clothes reproduce, why wouldn't the wedding ring reproduce?
That's an excellent question. It probably would, but it's not the wedding ring. And maybe but that's important.
Yeah.
Because the clothes have no value to him. He doesn't think that what comes out is the same as what went in.
Which is why he takes the wedding ring off.
Yes. He worries that there's a degradation. That it's not really himself. So he keeps the wedding ring. And that's not a throwaway detail.
No, it isn't. Absolutely. I mean, it's front and center.
And Borden, of course, at this point, can't figure out... He's talking to himself here, of course. I think there's an irony here. Of course, there's the dead one. There's an irony in the sense that Borden also has performer side and the thinker side.
Mm-hmm.
And that Borden isn't this... That one of the brothers is clearly smarter than the other. And
the
person playing Fallon in this scene is the one who's the smart one.
Right, who plays Cutter for Angier.
Yes. Now, it's at this point that I think... certainly I understood the mechanics of Angier's trick. Not how it was accomplished, because of course that's either supernatural or science fiction or whatever, but that essentially he was killing himself every night.
Yes.
And this is why I think that the closing shot was so troubling to both you and me, because, well, it was obvious that he was killing himself every night, but the final shot seemed to be a confirmation in case you didn't get it.
Right, which aggravated me, because I'm tired of being...
But we understand at this point that...
in case you didn't get it.
In the audience, we might understand them. We've been given all the information we need to know to understand the mechanics. Of course, there's yet another tank. It's the third or fourth time we've seen one now at this point. In the audience, we understand the mechanics, but Borden does not. He's still puzzled. Of course, it is Anakin Skywalker. Not Anakin. It was Obi-Wan Kenobi, as played by Ewan McGregor at this point. Apropos of nothing, he has an enormous schlong.
Ewan McGregor?
Yes.
Yeah, well.
Now we're back to the scene we're at the beginning. I think one of the charms of this movie is that as clear as it is about the information that you're being given and what it means and the implications of it, that there are still people still question it. Because it's not that it's not clear. It's almost like, it's almost a proof of the thesis that people want to be fooled. They don't accept the explanation they're given.
Briefly at this point.
So is that Alfred or is that Freddy?
I think Alfred's the good guy and Freddy's the jackass, so I'm going with Alfred.
Because that's clearly that is something that Angier would not. Well, it seems out of character from what we've seen of Borden.
What do you mean? To care?
That he would try to save him.
Yes.
At this point, he has to be working for Borden.
Why?
I think when we get to the point, and I can't articulate it right now, but I think when it becomes clear that he's working for Borden at the tail end of the movie, it seems to me that at that point, I mean, at this point, one of the Bordens is about to be executed.
Yes.
Which is just a few, you know, we're within a few days of, you know, at the very least, at the very most, we're within a few days of what happens at the end of the movie, in which he's clearly working for Borden.
Hmm.
I think he delivers the daughter to him.
Mm-hmm.
Now here's another bit of explicitness. Of course, look at the way you're not seeing the that tunnel vision again. He's fixated on her daughter, on his daughter, not paying attention to the fact that the guy who delivered his daughter is the guy that he killed, supposedly.
Mm-hmm.
And of course, the way that was shot, no head. Borden doesn't allow for the possibility that he has a twin brother or something.
Because no one cares about the man in the box.
life competition anymore, Edgy. This is not even good life.
It is, it has some so special take away from the end of the world.
You can't take it with you.
Who should we look after?
Goodbye, Professor. Come on, Gary.
No, stop.
Yeah. So what's this about?
Take it.
Yes, you can. Whatever your secret was, you have to agree. That is better.
Of course, right there, there's a bit of a little headstrong. That bit of gloating, of course, cost him his life. Because if that secret, if that were indeed his secret, I have a twin brother. He would have anticipated that he was not safe, mm-hmm. even after Borden is executed. So, his blindness is still a handicap, even though he has won. What are you thinking at this point in the movie? I mean, do you have a sense of where it's going or what's left?
I think what's happened here for me is that the tables have completely turned and that all of a sudden Borden is the decent one and Angier is the evil dude. Which is surprising because they're both evil.
They're not either evil. I think they are both. I don't know what they are. I mean, neither. I don't think Christopher Nolan judges his characters. I don't think he judges Leonard Shelby, nor do I think he judges Teddy in Memento. I don't think he I think he does not lionize Batman / Bruce Wayne, but he also does not absolve them. I mean, he basically says that they are responsible for the creation of this new criminal class in Gotham City. I don't think he... It's not that he doesn't have an opinion. It's that I don't think the issue of morality is very much of interest to him. I think he's a pragmatist.
So almost. That's Freddy at this point.
Freddy is the one who is in prison.
Yes.
And that is Alfred.
Yes. Which is surprising given how Freddy treated the little girl.
Why? What's surprising to you?
I mean, I guess you're crazy about your niece. But it seemed paternal. He seemed Alfred-y when he was talking to her, rather than Freddy.
He's just fucking with him there.
Yeah.
But it sets up, I mean, this whole... You expect something dramatic to happen when he gets hanged. And of course it doesn't, because that's not... You're watching the wrong thing. Okay, he said that it belongs among the prestige materials.
Right. So here's a question. Could you put the surviving twin in the machine and put things all back right?
Yeah, you could. You're absolutely right. Except it would be... Now, look, they're going down a tunnel with all these things, and it would appear that Cutter is not... Well, Cutter already knows the secret. No, Cutter doesn't know the secret. So he's not even paying attention. Because he's just gone by. And you can see him right back here in this shot. You can see the reflections.
But he's... I think he's saying...
He doesn't... Okay, so he doesn't understand here. This
he
is
does,
what,
because
this is
he's
what
saying...
Talking. Yeah. He's basically saying, this is what you're doing to yourself every time
every
you do
night.
This.
He said it was agony.
But we see all these tanks. I mean, you see them... Bad Dog Ginger is bored again by this movie. She didn't like it the first time.
She didn't go the first time.
She was bored, though. She slept.
Dogs are not allowed in the movie theater. Except at the drive-in.
She slept at home.
Yes.
Okay, now there... He nods at somebody he would recognize, because that is Borden. Cutter just nodded at Borden, who's going into the theater. Clearly he works for him. No one cares about the man in the box. The man in the box, of course, being the one who's dead. Okay, 1:58:15. How long does it take him to die? Okay, now here's the reveal. Now we know there are two Bordens. Somehow. I still didn't recognize that there was a twin brother at this point.
Mm-mm.
A twin.
I had to be told.
Yes. I agree.
I suppose you could be just as aggravated at having this spelled out to you as I was.
But there's really not... There's the first time you actually see that trick done, I think, in a single shot. I don't think we're given as much information as you think you are. It's all very fragmentary. And why would Cutter know? Simple, but not easy.
It is the left hand. This is what I was remembering, that it was left-handed.
No, it's very, very clear. We've seen the right hand with the wedding rings on it since then.
No, I know, but I'm saying that that's the scene I was remembering that I was confident it was.
So this is...
Alfred.
Yeah, you're right. You're right. So you're right. So I think you can move back and say which was which at any given point. We know the guy who was hanged was Freddy rather than Alfred.
Right.
See, he doesn't even recognize that Robert has sacrificed at this point. He has no idea what the trick is. He's walked in among these dead bodies. And he has no idea.
Well, but the argument is, what sacrifice have you made?
Well, it takes nothing to steal another man's work.
You end up right where you started. How is that a sacrifice?
No, but here's where here's where it's first made explicit.
Right.
What the trick is. And he kills himself.
This is plenty. I don't know. I don't have any objection
but
to
this
it.
But this is from Angier's mind. We still do not know, and I think it's fairly clear right there that, see, that's Angier telling that story. I kill myself. I've killed myself. Took courage to climb in that machine every night. Borden still doesn't get it.
Which nobody cares about.
Mm-hmm. Do you want to see what it cost me?
But my argument is, it didn't cost you anything.
You didn't see where you are, did you? He's not. But the point is that Borden doesn't see it.
And I'm arguing that it's not a sacrifice.
But that's not the point. But the point is that Borden hasn't even seen what's around him.
I understand.
Which is why that last shot is what it is. It's an understanding for Borden of what he's...
I am not challenging your interpretation. I'm simply saying that I come down on the side that it's not necessarily a sacrifice.
To kill yourself?
And come out exactly as you were?
But we're not sure of that. I mean...
If you do it 100 times, you've got to have a pretty good sense.
Well, but we're not sure where it was in the run. It could have been a week into the run.
Well, look at the length, look at the corridor of bodies. How many times did he do it to get it right?
But think about it if it were you. Think about it if it were you.
If after the first time it worked, I'd be pretty...
Would you be afraid about... How would you feel about shooting yourself?
I'd be pretty ballsy, I think.
About drowning yourself.
I think I'd be pretty ballsy after the first couple of times. Once I figured out it worked.
You wouldn't feel any sense of loss.
I don't know.
That maybe just a little bit of your soul was lost every time you did it and killed yourself. So, Borden has been staring straight ahead.
I understand. I know.
I'm explaining to people who might be listening.
Who haven't been yelled at enough already.
By you?
No.
Okay, so 1 foot, so it took him 5 minutes to die.
Every magic trick consists of three parts or banks. First part is called the bridge.
All those birds. There's lots of elegance here. Now he's walking among those tanks without seeing them still.
How do you know he sees them in the end?
It's the way the camera moves.
But isn't that Angier's workshop?
Might be, but he's clearly in cahoots with Cutter.
I'm just not...
He nodded at him. I mean,
I get that.
Okay, so he kind of pauses, turns around, looks back. And that's his point of view right there. That is from his point of view. So this last shot, I think, is from the point of view. I think that is the last shot is not from Borden's point of view in terms of those aren't his eyes, but the way he turned around, it was his first time seeing all those tanks. He finally understood that even though he was willing to part with some fingers, or part with his brother's fingers, Angier was willing to do something even more drastic. What are you shrugging about? It's fine if you don't think it's a sacrifice. I think that's okay.
I don't know that it is. I don't know that it's handed to me in a way that...
It's not a matter of whether it's... how it's given to you. I think it's a matter of... put yourself in the same situation. Do you think you've made a sacrifice?
I mean, don't think it's clear that he has.
And I think that's... I don't think that's an unreasonable position. I think you can say that, and I think that's valid. That's what you're looking for, isn't it? The word for me to say it was valid. I think it's a valid proposition that Angeria has not made a sacrifice. But the point of that ending is for Borden to understand what Angeria did.
I'll give you that. I will absolutely grant you that.
Okay, so we're in agreement on both of those points. Mm-hmm. But you're troubled by the ending still.
Mm-hmm.
And you're troubled by the ending because you think that Angeria saying he made a sacrifice... that you don't find him credible in that way. Right? I mean, that's what it comes down to.
I don't know that it has been shown to me that... he suffers in any meaningful way. Aside from the possibility that... there is some guilt about killing yourself. Or killing a person. But I don't even think that that's very clear. I don't know that he has the conscience to see that that's...
Well, that's a really interesting point. I mean, the idea of his conscience. Because I think I think that makes a lot of sense, that he doesn't have a conscience. She's cheering. No, I mean, I'm just interested in the idea. I mean, he says he's made sacrifices, and so...
But what are they?
But you don't believe him.
I don't. I think initially, but the balls to go into that thing and come out and shoot yourself in the gut when you realize what's going on. I mean, because he kills the original...
Yes, he kills... I mean,
the original duplicate. I know that sounds funny, but
I think he kills the original person.
No, he's in the machine. The person who shoots...
I think the way it shot suggests that he goes in, and then the one who shoots is the one who came out. I think he shoots...
I think it's the one who is in the machine who shoots.
I disagree, but it's not really that important. I mean, yeah. I think there's a way... I think in the end...
It doesn't make or break the argument.
Yes.
No.
I think that's a really interesting point, because it would suggest a failure... I mean, I think the crux of the movie is that Angeria sacrifices. And if you don't buy that, then the movie fails in a fundamental way.
Hmm.
You know, I think that's that's a compelling argument to me. I think it's compelling that you don't believe in the concept of his sacrifice, and I'm not going to doubt your reaction to that.
I think
I think that undermines the credibility of the movie.
I think he has sacrificed, but I don't think that's it.
What do you think his sacrifice is?
He's lost his wife. He's lost his focus.
His sacrifice is he doesn't have a life.
Yeah.
None of these people has a life.
Exactly. But I don't think that the bodies in the boxes are for him any meaningful sacrifice.
That's a really interesting idea. I think it's very compelling.
And now it's over. Yeah. Really over. Like, all the way through the credits over.
Thank you for listening. Goodbye.